Hi, I'm Eric Jansen. You're tuned to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. Our lives, our voices. This week, The Takeaway Bin, Other Poems and Lyrical Documentation. Toni Marosevich was my guest on Out in the Bay almost 2 years ago after the publication of her award-winning book of creative fiction, Super Short Stories, Pink Harvest. Actually, she just told me now they're called Flash Fiction. She's now out with the book of poetry, her third or fourth, depending on how you count, called The Takeaway Bin. The Takeaway Bin grew out of her earlier chapbook, My Oblique Strategies, which won the Frank O'Hara Chapbook Award given to an LGBT poet. The poems play with the concepts in a card game created by Peter Schmidt and Brian Eno in 1975 called The Oblique Strategies, which presents over 100 strategies to solve creative dilemmas. Each strategy is printed on a card. Shuffle and pick, and there you have a strategy to help solve your dilemma, like honor thy error as hidden intention, or use an unacceptable color. We'll hear some of those this half hour. Her earlier books of poetry and short prose include Queer Street, which documents what it's like for a gay couple to live on a weird block in the suburbs, and The Rooms We Make Our Own, which chronicles, among other things, her work in traditionally male occupations, including one poem about cleaning public park restrooms and inadvertently breaking up a gay tryst. She says these three poetry books document different stages in her life, and she's intrigued by how all of us lyrically document our lives as we go along via cell phone images, notes, poems, letters, so on. In fact, she's been teaching a class on this very topic at San Francisco State University, where she's a professor of creative writing. She wrote to me in an email last week that she's three queer poets in one. Think Sybil. Toni Marosevich, welcome back to Out in the Bay.
I know it's kind of a limited Sybil. Didn't she have 16 personalities? This is three, right?
Yes, I think it's the three faces of Eve.
Oh, perhaps. There we go.
There may be more than just the three. We'll find out, right?
That's great. Well, thank you for having me again. It's wonderful to be here.
So, thanks for being here. Tell me, first of all, what's behind the names of some of your books? The Takeaway Bin, let's start there, because that's your current... most recent out of the chute. Yeah, out of the chute. Thank you. I was going to say out of the closet, but that's just so cliche. So The Takeaway Bin, and that's based on these Brian Eno games, The Oblique Strategies. Right. How did you come up with the name for that, and what does it refer to?
Well, the title poem of the book is called The Takeaway Bin, and it's really about the things that we need to let go of. So the strategies have, when you use them, you have a creative dilemma and you pick a strategy and you can apply it to that dilemma. And then maybe your working problem might vanish or you might find a new approach. Well, the Takeaway Bin, in terms of this book, it's about things often that you kind of need to discard and get rid of, dilemmas, problems, political situations, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you have a, I'm sure you've got several you'd like to read for us. Do you want to start with one?
I would. The book is has about three different sections. And the first section really has to do with our human frailties and all of the personal things that we have to deal with all the time. And so the first poem I'm going to read is called The Giveaway. And so it's along that takeaway theme. And the strategy that you pick from the deck that I picked was give the game away. So it's a nice idea to just give the game away. Just give it away. This is that poem, Giveaway. The spare socks, the extra toaster, give the same away to those who least deserve it. The cheapskates, the two-timers, double your fun and give away a secret. You never really wanted fame and fortune, just another piece of toast. Then the next secret, you just lied. Then the next, I fathered your baby, even though I don't have the equipment. Now we're getting somewhere. If we gave all the games away, the overused Monopoly sets, missing the little Scotty, the purple card for St. Charles Place, or gave away Parcheesi, we'd lose all our marbles. If we wait for others to give the game away, it may take eons, and no one will ever remember whose turn is next. There are those with plenty to keep undercover. There were no weapons of mass destruction. The chalice and host were in the clear sight. The communion was on the table. If you give it away, they can't take it from you. Honesty, integrity, some kind of selfless esteem. Once I tried to give my heart away, but it came back, return to sender. And I knew the affair was over even before I got out my decoder ring.
How is that written on the page? The way you just wrote that, the second to last line there.
It's so hard to read because there's these little blanks on the page.
Right.
Did that come across?
It did. It came across as something was messed up there.
So there you
There's
go.
Some missing letters. Let me take a look. Oh, yeah, okay. Back return to ender. Oh, well, yeah, there's the S is missing and the O is missing and there's some underlines, yeah.
Someone could think that our little power went out for a minute or two.
They could.
So that follows the theme of giving away things that you don't need, that you no longer need. Just give them away.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a little bit of power when you give something away, because you choose to give it away.
You mean you get power? Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
Really good idea. Right. They can't take it from you, as in they can't take it from you.
And you can't take it with you.
There you go. You can't take it with you. They can't take it from you. It all works out.
That's right. I love the way you play with language and the fact that there, some of these are visual plays on words as well as, you know, you can't hear all of them. You can hear most of them, but you can't necessarily hear all of them.
Right. Right. Well, there's a there is a lot of play on words or cliche or popular culture. There's a poem called Lie or Lay that is from that political part, middle part of the book, where, you know, I never know if it's lie or lay, which is the right one to use.
It's something we all struggle with, those people who are in writing and
is
communication.
Is that true?
Well, actually, it's who and whom. That I get into the most trouble with my friends. I say, that's whom. Even my journalist friends, I said, oh, that's wrong. It should be whom.
Do you know the difference between lie and lay?
I'm not sure. I don't, actually. Would you tell us?
Nor do I. And I'm a college professor. I could get fired probably for this.
Well, we better edit that out.
let me read that one. And this
Please.
Is the advice, the strategy that I picked that started the poem. I pick a strategy and then riff off of that strategy. So the strategy was accept advice, which is always a good one. And so here's the poem, Lie or Lay. Let sleeping dogs lie. Believe the fabricated tale that Sparky and Duchess were on their way home. Their car got a flat. The curfew passed. They're sorry. Dog tired. We'll explain in the morning. Believe the fib, the ruse, the tall tale that covers the fact the sniffing went a bit too far. There was no problem with the car, no chaperone at the dance. Later, at the pound, there was a rumble. The best policy? Don't bark, don't tell. If sleeping dogs would lay, we'd get the lay of the land, or lay preachers on the stump or fire plug, a barky pulpit. Right-wing evangelists speak of hellfire and obedience. The left counters by claiming that all of heaven is off-leash. So let sleeping dogs lie, embellish, let them gild or yellow the lily. My bonny dog lies, not lays, over the ocean. Either way, it's a wide, wide sea, and if truth be told, we're all in it very, very deep. Now, did you understand Lie or Lay by the
Shouldn't
end
that be deeply?
Right. Oh, this is awful. You're right.
No, probably not, but that's one I struggle with,
did
believe
you?
It or not.
Deeply?
Not in this particular case,
you?
But that might ruin the whole impact.
Oh, my God. Well, there you go. You know, that's part of my subversive motive here is to ruin the impact, to make it a little less serious, but go ahead.
So let's just get serious for a moment.
Oh no.
To let you know, folks, this is being recorded on Friday, November 26th, the day after Thanksgiving, which is really, actually it's a school holiday. So what are we both doing here?
What are we doing here?
But we're producing great scintillating radio that we hope you'll all enjoy hearing. So Lie or Lay, with many of your poems, there's like, you can read them many times. There is a lot of wordplay and there's just a lot going on. And I could imagine, so, you know, there are particular things that were going through your mind when you wrote this that you'd like to share with us. What was your dilemma? Were you going through an actual dilemma, or were you just like, oh, I have to get another poem to fill this book up?
Well, you know, the idea is that, you know, I would wake up in the morning and I would think, well, I should do something. And there might be a specific dilemma, like I don't know how to write Lie or Lay, or it might be what to do with my life, or something kind of, you know, more major. So I'd pick a card from the deck. And the card would just, you could apply it to anything. So you could apply it to, you know, what you were going to do for that day, or your life, or something very, very specific and simple. And whatever strategy came your way, you could just riff on it. And like yourself, like you might have a you might have a specific or larger dilemma that you're just trying to, you know, you're knocking your head against. And Brian, you know, said, you know, his idea was that sometimes we go for things head on, and these strategies were a way to approach things tangentially and obliquely. So, given that, Eric,
okay,
do you have any dilemma?
Well, you know, I have a couple of dilemmas, but I think one that I could maybe share with the audience right now and get some feedback from them, and not immediately because this is being pre-taped, right, but we could still get some feedback from them. And it has to do with the theme music that we've been using now for a little over six years, Out in the Bay theme music. It starts and ends most of our shows. And I don't know, we're a little tired of it, but I want to know if you like it. So should I play it first and then ask for the dilemma card, or should we do the dilemma?
No, play it, and then I'll shuffle, and then we'll pick a card, okay?
Okay, we'll play just a little, and then while she's shuffling.
Okay.
Here's the Out in the Bay theme song. That's good. Oh, three times? Is that a scientific thing?
It's my way of doing it. Not scientific at
all. It's kind of good suspenseful music, actually. This is what it should be used for. I think they'd actually sing a tiny bit at the end, but you almost never hear that part. Okay, I believe that's the Pet Shop Boys. Does anybody know? Anyway, we don't know. It's okay. So now, am I supposed to pick a card out of the stack?
Well,
and the creative dilemma is, do we continue using this?
Yeah.
And how do we go about finding a different song if we decide we want to find new theme music?
Just select a card, any card.
And do I read it or do you?
You read it. Go ahead.
Take away the elements in order of apparent non-importance.
Perfect.
So does that mean take away the non-important ones first? Yeah, I think that's what that means.
Do you want a different
that
card?
Interpret? Oh, is that how you play the game?
It's like that's how I play the game. If I don't like the card, I pick another
good,
card.
Good, let's pick another card.
Okay.
It's sort of like let's flip a coin. If you don't like the outcome, then let's do two
you
out of
three. You can go through all 100, you know.
Disconnect from desire.
Oh, perfect.
I think that works.
Okay.
So between the two of them, okay. Are you going to write a poem for me now to help? Disconnect from the desire to have the perfect theme music, and that also links to the take away the elements of non-importance. That's probably one of the least important things to worry about.
Oh, I think you've absolutely found a way to use these in a second.
Wow.
Wonderful.
Thank you. Well, that felt kind of good. I don't think I want to do another one right now in the air. But would you like to read another?
We could do many off air.
Would you like to read another? But see how you could use this. So now this. Let's just be clear. The Oblique Strategies card game by Brian Eno is not part of this book, but in the takeaway bin, every poem at the top there's a little quotation,
right,
which is actually one of these strategies. Like, well, we mentioned at the beginning of the show, use a color that is unacceptable or something like that.
Yes.
Would you like to read the one that goes with that?
I don't, I
think it's number two.
No,
oh,
no,
it's not?
No.
Oh.
I didn't use all of the
you
cards.
Didn't use
there's
that
just
one.
Like, oh, you're
the
absolutely right. You've got it. I forgot all about it. How about that?
Yeah, I think it relates to another thing that I liked, but we'll get to it from one of your other books, Some Grand Fate, because that's about colors too, and then there's the whole Pink Harvest thing.
Yeah. So well, let's do that one. Yes, I will. So let me read that. I didn't even think to that. It's the color wheel, and the strategy is using an unacceptable color. Somewhere along the way, we left true blue behind, that in an honest day's work. Duck l'orange was once on the menu, but now it's wasabi this and mango that. Mustard is big, and puce. Whoever thought that would sell, the odd green color well. Odd. Pink might prove unacceptable to a man's man, but chartreuse is certain to send him over the edge. I've lost the silver thread, and older needles will not mend this heart of mine. Beige is the worst, deadly, dull. I need something to wake me. Tangerine or cherries in the snow to help clear the red out. which they tried to do in Tiananmen Square, banishing the resistors. Burnt sienna smolders, chars. I once knew a nurse who wore eggplant leather pants to the Christmas party. Her husband had money. She wanted us to know. We roasted her later. Did you see how tight? And could have ended up with a fine baba ganoush, but no one brought any pita. Yellow's been ignored, but buttercream has surfaced. I've lost the thread again. Where did it go? Unacceptable, cries the teacher and hands the poem back with a big red F. Better choose another career. Forget the wine dark sea. You know, there was this nurse. I used to work at the blood bank. She wore eggplant leather pants, like under her little nurse outfit. I mean, her phlebotomy outfit.
Oh, that's where the eggplant leather pants
came
from.
Right. That's okay. Right. That was back in those truck driving days. So.
Okay. You're tuned to Out in the Bay. My guest is Toni Marosevic. She just read Color Wheel from The Takeaway Bin, her newest book of poetry, which is based on Brian Eno's game, Oblique Strategies. Now, the last line here, better choose another career, forget the wine dark sea. You teach poetry and creative writing mm-hmm. at San Francisco State University. Mm-hmm. What do you tell your students about poetry as a career?
Well, I say that what you're doing in the moment counts, and that poetry is a wonderful... I think of it less of as a career path, to tell you the truth, but... What can you think of as a career path right now that works, huh?
Not much.
So,
produce an independent radio show on a nonprofit station.
There's a
career choice.
So I don't talk to them too much about career, but I do talk to them about poetry and about following your imagination's kind of odd, strange, associative tracks, and that's very much what the Takeaway Bin does, is it follows its own course, you know. Whatever comes your way, then you begin to kind of riff on that. Usually what randomly comes in the middle of your path. So that's the way I talk to them about poetry.
Great. We're going to take a very brief musical break. We're going to hear some Brian Eno music, Brian Eno, who came up with Oblique Strategies and inspired The Takeaway Bin. And when we come back in just a minute or so, we're going to hear from some of Toni Marosevic's other books. You're tuned to Out in the Bay. Brian Eno from his album Another Day on Earth. You're tuned to Out in the Bay here on 91.7 FM KALW. My guest is Toni Marosevic. We've heard from her book The Takeaway Bin, and she has two other books of poetry. And when she cajoled me to interview her again, because I enjoyed it so much the first time around when she had Pink Harvest out a couple of years ago, she said, I'm kind of like three queer poets in one. And you've been teaching a class at SF State about documenting our lives, or lyric documentation. Did I get that right?
Well, yeah. And it started with Walker Evans, who Depression era photographer, who came up with this idea of lyric documentary, and that is that not just regular documentary of evidence. Here's the facts. But when you add the lyric to it, how that lifts documentary beyond just basic hard evidence. So I started to think about that in terms of collections, and that each point in a poet's life or a writer's life or even Brian Eno's life, he's documenting lyrically documenting his particular obsessions, interests, experience. So that's when I started to think of the collections that way.
And do you find people doing that more and more these days, or just in a different way than they had in the past? I mean, photo albums have been part of our lives. I mean, we find old photographs of our relatives from way back when. But, you know, just a week or two ago, we had this intense hailstorm in the middle of the night. It woke me up at 3:30 in the morning. And I looked out because the hail was bouncing off the roof of my neighbors right outside my window. And then I looked out on the street, and the street was actually, it had a full, thin, but completely coated with hail, the entire street. Yeah. And I told this friend of mine, he said, oh, did you take a picture?
Yes.
I'm like, at 3:30 in the morning? I wouldn't even think to take a picture. And can't people remember things anymore? No, we have to snap it with our phone and mail it off to somebody or email it to somebody.
There's really this just kind of fascinating fascinating world now of documenting. Everyone has the ability or the technology to, most everyone or many people, to document almost anything that catches their eye or that they're fascinated with. And that's, so people do it all the time now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, to lift it to lyric documentary, you might want to take those 8,000 shots and decide which ones you might keep to form some kind of story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and that would be an interesting lyric documentary. So maybe collecting evidence and then doing something with it, elevating it in some way to an art form might be an interesting way to look at lyric documentary.
Okay. And so...
So elevating restrooms to an art form, are we going to go there? No, go
ahead. Well, you just did. You just did. So I'm glad you did, because I wasn't sure exactly where I was going to go. The book, The Rooms We Make Our Own, this is your first full book of poetry, right?
That's right.
Well, it's not just poetry. Poetry and a flash fiction, as I learned the term just today. You learn something new every day. And on the back cover, it says something about to write about what it is like to grow up in a working class commercial fishing family, work as a non-traditional laborer in the physical trades, labor in a marriage, and then come out, emerge from the assumption of excellent health into the reality of chronic illness, return to school, become a writer and a teacher of writing, and through it all, love the ones you love, be sustained by them, requires more than one voice, more than one form. That's pretty nice writing. Did you do that yourself? Because I know so often, you know.
I think I had a hand in that, but that's a long run-on sentence. Isn't it?
I wasn't going to say that. See, you're the critic's voice is in your own head, not mine.
Oh, there you go.
But, you know, so I just learned from another thing. I didn't know you were married before. So you talk about laboring in a marriage.
Yes.
And then there's the laboring in the restroom.
Labor is all over the place.
Yeah, labor. You didn't give birth by any chance, did you?
That's the one part of labor that I didn't
done.
I didn't do that labor.
Okay.
We have a new puppy. That doesn't count. Go ahead.
So you've got, in the beginning of this book, starts with several. Gandhi joins the workforce. Madonna joins the workforce.
I had a lot of jobs.
Betty Crocker joins the workforce. Hermes joins the workforce, etc. Do you want to read the Gandhi one about the... We alluded to it at the beginning, the gay male tryst.
Yes.
That broke up in the park. Was this Golden Gate Park or a different park?
You know, this was in the Northwest, and my job was that I was a pressure washer, and I had to go around to the park restrooms and then spray them out with my big machine.
Mm-hmm.
So this is this book documents those, at least the start of it documents those early work years. So here's Gandhi joins the workforce. With hose in hand, finger on the trigger, I wrap the head of the nozzle on the park restroom door, yell, clean up, in the most masculine voice I can muster, remove the tremor, notice small nicks in the wood where the metal handle leaves its mark. After a moment, they come out, one after another, three men together, who look up, instead of the vice squad, see a small woman with a pressure washer and big boots trying to look tough. I smile, offer apologies. God, I'm sorry. I just have a job to do. I fashion myself Gandhi, no work too demeaning, no work beneath me, sold on the idea that by cleaning Johns, I'm doing a man service, doing a service to mankind. And well, mankind, this certainly is. Them on their gay march to the sea, noses held high and hang British rule. Inside, I blast away any vestige of romance, swab toilets, do things my mother never intended me to do. Notice things are cleaner here than on the women's side, where the sticky condom lay on the toilet seat next to the torn picture from Playboy. You've got to be kidding. This is where some guy got off. It's not the group of three I fear, but the ones like the guy at the last stop, who hears the warning but doesn't make a sound, who stands in mock surprise, his pants down at his ankles when I come round the bend, without even the decency to cover, my mother would say. I picture Richard Speck, then Ted Bundy, his good looks, his boyish charm, and perfectly healthy arm, hung in a sling, asking young women, "Ma'am, can you help me with my boat?" Forgetting about Gandhi for a moment, I point my weapon, pray I have enough water pressure to blow him away with the rest of the dirt. Are women more powerful when they have equipment? Here at this last stop, someone knocks on the door. Remembering I'm preparing a love room, I drop a couple extra deodorizing discs in the urinal. Do not reach for the pennies. Decide to leave the phone numbers up another day. What the hell? Small victories of intimacy. What did Gandhi say? Everything is possible with the power of love.
I love that you've always had a sense of humor in your work. You don't take yourself too seriously.
Well, when I first started writing poems, I thought, oh my God, how could you write about urinals and pennies and things like that? You know, and I thought, well, that's my experience. That's what I'm going to lyrically document. So, uh-huh. I decided that you could write poems with that kind of experience in them.
You know, we're running short on time. It's hard to believe, but and I do want to definitely hear you read one from Queer Street so we can talk about Pacifica, where my ex-wife lives, a former wife. but I do want to just mention this one thing. So Madonna joins the workforce. I'm not going to read the whole poem, but this is the one. It's about a woman driving a truck. What is it about a woman driving a truck? And as you go along, you've pulled into the gas station, I guess, the fuel stop, excuse me, the truck stop. A guy pulls alongside, his rig parallels mine, his face doughy, black stubbled, as if the toast were left in too long. Read on the side of his truck that he works for Wonder Bread. You are what you transport. He shouts over at me, "Need some help with that nozzle, little lady?" Does this before he notices that with 35 feet of trailer behind me, turn page, mine is longer than his. I've just had to ask you, do you dictate where the page turns come? Because when I read that the other night, I had to laugh. It's like, no, 35 feet of trailer behind me, mine is longer than his. Oh, anyway, so.
That was a perfect, I mean, it's a perfect break, isn't it?
It's a beautiful coincidence, considering it wasn't planned.
I had nothing to do with that.
Oh, dear. We're almost out of time.
Oh,
can
no.
you read some quick little, no, you can't. We're just going to have to talk about Queer Street briefly.
Okay.
It's about living in Pacifica being the only queer couple on the...
That's right. And that we... and I can do this quickly in that we moved on to this block and it's a strange little block. And the title comes from Robert Louis Stevenson's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, which is, "The more it looks like Queer Street, the less I ask." So we ended up being the odd couple on the block, but that's the queerest block you're ever going to see. When we first came on there, a woman comes over to us and she says, "I sure am glad a gay couple had the guts to move on this block."
And why?
She thought that we wouldn't be accepted. My partner says, "Well, will that be a problem?" She says, "Oh, no, there's a black family that lives two doors down." So her view was that we could make some kind of link as outsiders.
Yeah. And now apparently it's lesbian heaven, kind of, right?
I tell you, okay. It's lesbian nation down there in the Pacific.
You've been listening to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. My guest is Tony Marosevich. You have a website where people can find out more about your books?
I do. www.tonymarosevich.com. And
we don't have to spell that. T-O-N-I.
That's T-O-N-I-M-I-R-O-S-E-V as in vegetables, I-C-H. And the new book can be found at Small Press Distribution, www.spdbooks.com.
Out in the Bay is independently produced by me and Marilyn Pittman. We thank KALW for studio time. We receive no financial support from KALW. To keep Out in the Bay going strong, please consider a tax-deductible donation at our website, outinthebay.com, where you can hear past shows, sign up for weekly podcasts, and take us with you via Stitcher. Stitcher, the app that lets you download radio programs to your mobile device. It's all free on our website, outinthebay.com. We'd love to hear from you, so write to us, Marilyn at outinthebay.com and Eric at outinthebay.com. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for listening. I am out of time.